Welcome back to The Q-Files. Your hosts, Shane and Lori, are curious explorers of the weird and strange. And this week, we'll go back to where it all began. Lori's back porch.
It's the wrong pack.
Get the full pack.
I brought two packs.
Okay.
Of course, there's like loud cars as we're starting this.
Well, that's because we're on the back porch. This is essentially a field recording, I think, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this is really a moment for us to reflect on our first season of, believe it or not, 18 episodes.
Which is insane.
And I think you would agree that this time last year, we had no idea that by this time this year, we would have recorded 18 episodes.
No, I mean, so at this point last year, we were still kind of toying around with the idea, and I think it was April or May, we went to Mount Sterling.
Yeah, the junkyard.
We went to a junkyard, spent all day in Mount Sterling, and didn't.
That's why we get along so well, is that we could both spend the day in Mount Sterling together in an endless, many acres wide junkyard, and we had a blast. And just knowing that we had a blast dealing with that, we saw it as a car graveyard, really. And we were talking about doing a ghost hunt there at night, which we haven't done yet. No one has yet ghost hunted in a junkyard. And just think about that. How many lives were lost in those cars? How many ghosts? That's something we have to do next season.
Sorry, I was fixing my headphones. but no, I absolutely agree. Like the idea of the junkyard, I still think is fantastic and wonderful. And I hope that we'll wrap that kind of up and bring it together into some kind of actual story rather than, I mean,
just Lori and Shane going to a junkyard.
Yeah. I mean, that was so, but it wasn't even just that. It was Lori and Shane breaking into a junkyard after trying not to break in, but realizing that no one's around, so we might as well just go in.
True story.
And then joking about getting murdered for trespassing the entire time.
That's right. It was fun. Yeah, I think the biggest problem with having a ghost hunt in a junkyard at night, particularly an auto junkyard at night, which is something we've wanted to do, is first of all, no one's ever done that. Like I said before, you know there are ghosts in that junkyard, but the biggest problem is getting permission to go into a junkyard at night with a bunch of ghost hunters, and so far we've not been able to do that. So our next question is whether or not, who's in a junkyard at night? Why don't we just go and take our chances? So we'll see how that susses out in season two.
Yeah, we're not breaking the law.
But we're not
breaking the law.
Right, exactly.
No, so we did 18 episodes. What was the highlight for you? We'll do highlights and lowlights.
Okay. I am really, I'm partial to a couple of episodes. I really loved When Lincoln Could Fly. I think we hit our stride there. I think talking to William Black, having an author from The Atlantic share with us and our excitement about, which was kind of a discovery to us. I'm a Lincoln aficionado anyway, but to combine...
If folks didn't get that already
from season one. But for us to combine this historical, transcripts or recordings of these ex-slave narratives, then with the folklore, African-American folklore of people flying, I think it was exactly the kind of synthesis that I love that we often do, bringing those two ideas together that honestly no one had brought those two ideas together. And that was very exciting to combine those things to explain something historically that might have been really magical. and that was exciting. Yeah. We kind of discovered it along the way as we put the episode together. And That was really, I felt like we hit our stride then, where we were, you know, sort of bringing these stories and really combining folklore and history and magic and sort of what could maybe be a paranormal experience to this phenomenon.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree. I think it hit, it's kind of one of those things where it's, so it sounds magical and mystical just by the title alone, but then you kind of dive into the story and you realize that it's serious and it's something that a lot of people don't know.
Yes.
But then, you know, we're adding on top of that kind of like the paranormal flavor of like, how do these stories develop? Why do they develop? What does that mean? What did that mean to folks back then? It, just all of that. And it's I don't know. It's learning history that probably I don't think a lot of people know.
And part of that, we didn't even know. I didn't even know when, you know, we started that episode. And, you know, getting people to think of history in a different way and the paranormal in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of times people just think of the paranormal as being UFOs or Bigfoot or all those sort of things. I think what we have started to do is expand the notion of what paranormal is. And there's so much history to look at through paranormal eyes and the eyes of magic or magical happenings. And to me, that's really exciting to go back through that and find those and, you know, get people as excited about it as we are.
No, absolutely. And I don't know, we found the article, well, that you found the article in probably a few years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. Maybe yeah. It's like been 3 years ago. Yeah.
But then even just reaching out and trying to get him to talk to us. And I mean, after we talked to Chris, right?
Yeah. Chris Blake.
Chris Blake.
Yeah.
With the minorities in UFO phenomenon and just being like, well, this is our second interview, but like now it's with the Atlantic. And it was fun and exciting and not something that I saw happening necessarily this year.
Yeah. And you know what was so exciting to me is that, A, it's very exciting to talk to someone who knows so much about the subject.
Yeah.
And number two, his enthusiasm for his subject. I mean, Bill was, I mean, he was giddy talking about this and it really shared our excitement. And I think we got excited by him, but just to synthesize this story in maybe a different way and making people think made me kind of feel like that's really what we want to do with the Q-Files is synthesize ideas in different ways and expand the notion of the paranormal. And, you know, very often, as we do, bring it to relevant issues that are happening today, because, you know, I truly believe that the paranormal is nothing more than a gap in the cosmos or a space in the cosmos that's teaching us about our own reality. And it's important to link those things to our reality because it's what the cosmos is trying to show us. It's not some independent reality that has nothing to do with ours. So it's important that we look to find the relevance to our own world at this time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I mean, I think we talked about that, or at least maybe not directly. Well, we definitely talked about it directly with like Hinsdale House. But I think indirectly is just that there's this idea of history connecting to the present, but also what might be beyond.
Yes.
And I think that's something that we've managed to cover in a few different ways from a few different angles.
Right.
That is relatively unique.
Yeah, I think so too. So what was your favorite episode?
So I've thought about this because I knew I was going to ask you that question and I knew you would ask me that question. I think it's the Austin Mystery Man.
Mm.
And I know that's like selfish because it was all about me.
But it was so fun. It was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like you were talking about with, you know, when Lincoln could fly and us hitting our stride. And I do think that was like when we hit a different level of kind of like the development of whatever we're doing, this series or whatever it is, right?
And a new level of our own confidence about doing this series.
Exactly. Yes.
And that came after Austin. You really did set the tone for that.
But it was the first time where we were like, okay, you know, there's like 5 hours of recordings for that. And we're not going to use all of it because most of it doesn't matter. Half of it is me talking to myself into a microphone about what just happened, which was bizarre beyond bizarre, but fantastic in hindsight. But I don't know. I felt like we really got the opportunity to kind of like tell a story and piece it together with what we had done in the field. And then we got to, you know, there's, I've stayed in contact with, Brad and, Jesus. I can't think of his name, but
that's
anyway.
That's incredible. You stayed in contact with him.
Well, like Brad will send me photos from the Austin Dam Memorial Park.
Wow.
You know, and I think that might be the only thing he uses Facebook for because his profile is bare bones. But I really appreciate it. And I don't know. It was just a fantastic thing. And I really thought I think that episode for me was at least when I saw what we could do.
Yeah. I think we became confident about telling stories.
Yeah.
As opposed to just letting field recordings.
Yeah.
Or us just sitting talking as we're doing now. But I think it gave us the confidence that we could ascertain what was important about the story, focus on the story, and then bring what we call the outro, you know, bring this all together in a relevant manner for listeners and for what's going on in the world. And there's something, and you have to credit this too for that episode, great serendipity, and we talk about synchronicity,
right?
Because you just happen to run into them. I mean, you know, when something, especially being a paranormal podcast, when we have a synchronicity or serendipity, and maybe we should talk about the difference between serendipity and synchronicity in a minute, but you pay attention, and that's exactly what happened to you with that episode. I mean, out there all alone.
I was out there all alone. I'm lost. I had no cell phone signal. I remember thinking, like, I can't even tell someone to check on me because I can't send them a message.
Yeah, you didn't call me all day. You didn't message me all day long.
Right. And, you know, what was supposed to be a, like, 6-hour drive home turned into an 11-hour drive home because I spent so long at the Austin Dam that, like, by the time I was leaving, I was like, I have to tell Steven. I need to let someone know that I'm alive and I'm okay.
Because we were kind of wondering at one point. Yeah.
And so, but hilariously, I didn't have any signal for another like 20 or 30 minutes. And I passed through this little town and I remember pulling over just being like, it might work here. Because it was the first thing that wasn't just highway in the hills.
Yeah. 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 And there they were.
I mean, pulling up into Austin Dam, you know, it was, I mean, it's a beautiful place. You're in the like low mountains. So it's rolling and there's just this gash in the land and it didn't seem like anyone was there. And it turns out no one was actually there except the three of us. And they happened to be the two best people I could possibly talk to.
The two experts about the Austin Dam disaster. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Like, I don't know how you can't even plan that.
You can't. And then when I heard the recordings of them, you know, just the cadence of their voices, they had such personality right away. They really did. It was just golden. I mean, it absolutely was. It was just, again, one of those things that happens, not always, when you're in the field, when you just... It is that you stumble upon the right people at the right time or the right key on the radiator or you just stumble upon, you know.
Did we even talk about the key on the radiator? I think we did.
In the episode.
In Brindu, did we?
Yeah, okay. Brindu, yeah. Yeah.
But no, I mean, just I think one of the things that we've done successfully is to try to be as authentic as possible. And it, you know, even editing footage to kind of make more sense for a story, it's still footage that happened as it happened.
Always have it happen as it happened. That's right. We just turn on the recorders and go. And sometimes there's something and sometimes there isn't. We've been very lucky. Almost everything we've done, there has been something.
Well, I mean, I feel like we drug Hinsdale House out for far too long. But
we were just starting. We were just starting.
But one of my favorite lines in that is, I don't even remember exactly what I said, but I was like, and nothing happened. Like, it was just, we spent how many hours there and like nothing happened. I can't like reiterate that enough. Like, nothing really happened that whole time.
But you know what? I think it's really important, especially on a paranormal podcast, when you admit nothing happened. Instead of trying to make up something happen. Yeah, we'll be the first to tell you nothing happened because right. You're spending 20 minutes with us. We spent 10 hours there and nothing happened.
It's so
and we
true.
Have done it on multiple occasions. I think that's something to tell our listeners for sure. We are always being very honest about what we record and Shane does all the editing amazingly enough. He pulls this all together every week and adds the music. I mean, he is really the workhorse for, I talk and do a recording and occasionally write it and do things like that. But Shane's done the work. And let's talk for a minute about the music, which we've just found so fitting this year.
Yeah. So I stumbled upon a music producer. The website, their company name is Sounds Like an Earful. And, he had done a lot of kind of indie work in general. Like, it's an indie producer, right?
Yeah.
But I kept coming back to his music. I remember sitting here and being like talking about the podcast and if we're going to do it, how it's going to sound, and like sharing music from him to you.
Yes.
And like when it came time to just do it, which happened on this porch when it was like, let's just fucking do it.
I did.
It was like, well, I have to use his music.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any other resource. And it's just, he has just a massive collection, a huge portfolio.
It's like it always fits. Whatever we're doing, there's something that always fits. Yeah. Yeah, he's fit. So props to him. We've been...
Yeah.
I don't think there's been any other music used much, has there, besides...
Well, the trailer. But that was a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe in hindsight, I would have done it slightly differently. Because it's more like Halloween themed, which worked for the trailer because we... released it on Halloween.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, outside of a few cuts from other things, like we did, I can't even think what it's called. Oh my gosh. Like the Mr. Ed theme. That was definitely
in there. So that means we need to do a new trailer for season two.
Potentially, yeah.
And what's really amazing, if you go back and listen to that trailer, we did none of the stories.
In
the 18 episodes that we planned to do. And we had every intention of doing all those
absolutely.
Stories. And they're still on the burner. They're just bigger stories than I think we knew they would be. But yeah, we'll have to do trailer two for season two here pretty soon. And revisit some of those stories. So let me ask you. So where do you see us in the paranormal podcast community? Where are we? What are we? And we've had great success. It's only gone up and up with all the listens. Thank you all out there.
Yeah.
So much, and our subscribers. So where do you see us in all these? There's a lot of paranormal podcasts and you go on a lot of them and talk on a lot of them. So where in your mind does the Q-Files fit into all of this community?
I don't know. When we sat down in March of 2019 and really had like a real conversation about what we wanted to do, what it would look like, it all made a lot of sense. And I think that's what we thought we were going to do, but we ended up creating what I like to think of as a completely unique show where, you know, we're talking to people that other folks aren't talking to. We're going to places other people aren't going to. We're covering stories that other people aren't doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really like, is that, you know, you can listen to any number of kind of paranormal themed podcasts and you get a lot of the same information. But what you're getting with us is maybe sometimes you're going to hear the same story or you'll hear the same story somewhere else. But I like to think we try to take it a step further, mm-hmm. and kind of explain what that means, or like, where is that coming from? Or like what created that, mm-hmm. and
context, a lot more context and history too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, spooky, kooky show. It's there's like some meat to the bone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right, because I think things that we consider, I think we look at paranormal as not your typical definition of paranormal. We look at paranormal as anything outside the normal.
Yeah.
Whether it is a talking horse, you know, a psychic horse, a freak, you know, a funeral train, you know, all of those right. things that are beyond normal. Maybe we should start calling ourselves Beyond Normal
right.
podcast
yeah.
because I don't think we fit in, and I don't think we ever intended to, but I don't think we ever saw that we would be doing a story about stigmata and exhumations when we started. And here's the thing I love. I think this is why, first of all, I will say, making this podcast with you has been one of the absolutely most joyful experiences of my life. And I think one of the reasons is because we bring our interest to this.
Yeah,
things
absolutely.
We've been, you know, I've gotten to pitch shows to you about stigmata, something I've
yeah.
been interested
yeah.
in my whole life. Lincoln Funeral Train. You know, really going after the things that we passionately, truly find interesting ourselves. So, of course, we expect our listeners to be interested in them.
Right, yeah.
Even if they're sometimes a little nerdy and geeky or whatever. But, you know, when you bring your own interests into it without letting the show define the content, but letting your interest define the content, we bring that passion to that. And it's been so exciting for me to, you know, get to tell all my little quirky,
yeah.
I've lived a lot longer than you have. And I get to tell all my little quirky stories that I've told you for what
forever,
eight,
yeah.
10 years now or something. It's nice to get to share those. And to get to use this platform is sharing my own fascination with, frankly, just the unusual.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I've always said that you're the most interesting person I know. And that I have. And I've said that to you. And, you know, you're this legitimate, like, Renaissance woman. And
oh, you're sweet.
Like, you know so much, have experienced so much, have done so many completely weird things where you're like, you'll just be telling a story and you're like, well, that reminds me of the one time I was in Tennessee, and like 30 minutes later you're like, I don't know how we got here, but that was fascinating. I mean, it's
well
great.
Thank you
know.
The freedom to be, you know, my authentic self, there you
right,
go
right.
is really, really nice. And I think this was very much, you know, us breaking out of the queer ghost hunter mold.
That's definitely
where we really started this. And you know, we really cut our teeth on paranormal experiences with queer ghost hunters. All in all, exceptional experience.
Yeah.
It really was. We had incredible paranormal experiences.
Right.
But, you know, just realizing even with that, that there's something beyond ghosts. And we didn't want to be confined to just being queer ghost hunters.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was, I mean, having you all over for brunch and like enjoying that and then being like, so here's why you're all here. And then, you know, just having a serious conversation of queer ghost hunters is great and it's a fantastic idea and it should have been 1,000 times better than it was, but like, you take your hits when you get them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We could do something again, continue with this like mission of, I guess, as I don't know, presumptuous as it sounds, of like education
mm-hmm.
with entertainment and just expand it beyond ghosts. Because one of the big problems we had with queer ghost hunters was any location had to have a queer ghost.
Yeah.
And like, you can't escape the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. That was, yeah. you know, but once you start exploring other topics, like, I don't know, but why can't we talk about, I don't know, Lilydale and not make it queer.
Yeah.
You yeah. know, are there queer people there? Yeah, absolutely. We can bring them up. We can talk about that. We can talk about the queer history of spiritualism, but like, it doesn't have to be the overriding point.
Right.
And, you know, we can talk about, you know, women's liberation then instead as like the overall writing point.
Because the irony of this still, and we purposely call this the Q Files.
Yeah.
As in queer.
I don't think we've ever explained the name for a long time.
Queer, but we really meant to expand. Not only were we expanding the paranormal, we meant to expand the notion of queer.
Right.
Not only queer as in LGBTQ, but queer as in
weird,
beyond normal. And you know what we find, I think, often, even though many of the subject matter topics we do now aren't necessarily queer, in the end, they tie back to very often a marginalized community.
Correct.
A marginalized community that is analogous to the queer community. So somehow, even when we're expanding on this, very often we come back to, you know, really trying to recognize and celebrate or at least educate about marginalized communities in this country. And somehow we kind of always end up there in a way.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think it's like our underlying intent, but I also think, gosh, probably March or April of this year, we really kind of dove full bore into that kind of concept. Mm-hmm. And it may not be reflected in kind of like when the episodes came out, but by the end of the season, yeah, kind of the stars completely aligned with what we were doing and had talked about doing. And it was like, well, now we have to do it.
Yeah.
And we have to do it, hopefully, you know, total justice and as best as we possibly can. And I felt like we did.
Yeah, I do too. I feel like we came full circle.
Yeah.
And in ending up with Digging Up the Dead, we truly came full circle to recognizing, you know, there's a lot of horror in the history, right, of marginalized communities,
yeah,
that is way beyond the normal. And I think our job is to give that attention too. And especially in this time, I think, you know, we're both social justice oriented people anyway.
Yeah.
It's not probably any big surprise that a lot of our our stories end up being sort of a social justice lesson in the end. I don't want that to sound so pedantic, but I think we came to exactly the point we had wanted to come, and we didn't even know we were headed there.
No, I totally agree. And I think that maybe that's something that, I don't know, probably a lot of folks don't realize, is that the episodes started very planned and kind of like calculated where we were going. And then we hit a certain point where it was like, we don't have anything else to do, so we need to find something. But because we were releasing every 2 weeks, it was like, we need to find something like yesterday. And
how many texts? Hey, how, yeah, about this?
How does this sound? Or like, we're sitting here on the porch and we have a 5-hour conversation about what we want to do. And then it's like, well, you know, we talked about this a month ago, blah, blah, blah. Let's just do it now.
It's like, wait a minute. Remember, like back in February, we were talking about Stigmata. Remember that?
Let's just do it.
Let's just, what about Stigmata? Boom. I mean, happened. That's really how they happened.
It is. I don't know how, like, it happened. I don't even, at least 10 of the episodes were like planned 2 weeks in advance. Research recorded, edited, boom, released. And I don't know how we kept doing it, but I feel like most of them turned out really well.
Yeah, I do too. I'm proud of what we've done. I am.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. So I have to make one little correction over the this has haunted me. Haunted me, people. Haunted me. I have to make one little correction that probably no one would notice unless I'm bringing it up now, but I have to do it. So in the Lincoln, when Lincoln Could Fly episode, I said, had written, Shane did the narrative, but I had written it. I take full credit. I had written that in Song of Solomon, the Toni Morrison novel, that the African eponymous protagonist had flown away in the end. Well, the protagonist's name is not Solomon. It's Milkman. I somehow knew that and forgot that. And so forgive that. It is not the African-American eponymous protagonist. It is the African-American protagonist at the end of Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon that flew away. So I needed, because when I realized that, I was like, oh my God, you know, I can, at least Toni Morrison can't hear me say that right now. That's all I can say. So I've read the book many times. It had been a few years ago. I just started reading it again about 3 weeks ago and was horrified when I realized I had made that rather big literary faux pas. So anyway, that's my only correction for tonight. So I had to throw that in there.
I don't think anyone probably noticed. No one said anything if they did notice.
I know.
But I don't
just know. In case.
Just in case. But I also think it's, I don't know, it's good to admit when there was a mistake. And I don't know. Like, I feel like we maybe aren't experts on a lot of what we discuss, but we
I'm
have...
I'm an expert on nothing. Nothing.
But we've been given that title by other people. Mm.
Interesting. Yes. I think we present ourselves as the experts, although we right. might not mean to.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going on and talking about something, you're presenting yourself as an expert, and we're just really not experts.
No.
Just really excited, enthusiastic people about our subject matter. But we do a good deal of research. Yeah. I mean, we do try to make sure what we're saying, especially if it's historically based, make sure that we're saying what we're saying is a fact.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we do enough research to, no matter what it is, you're at least getting the gist of it, and the gist is going to be right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, we started off kind of long with some stories, but by the end we were like, let's try to shoot for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And some of the topics are really big
yeah.
to cover in 20 minutes.
And we've heard some criticism that it's too short, but I also think I was just listening to an interview with Lin Manuel Miranda today, and he was talking about how he initially started a lot of the verses at 6 verses, and then he had this personal challenge to get it down to 4. And then he realized if he really, really worked, he could get the information in 6 verses down to 2.
Wow.
And that's the genius of that.
Yeah.
Is that imparting this information, imparting what's relevant, what's pertinent. Now, because I like to think that if our readers would like to learn more, they would go pick up a book or go read an article about this.
Hopefully.
But, you know, it's really nice to pick up a 25-minute podcast that you can listen to in 25 minutes. I'm all for 2,000-page books, so I'm not about the short read in any way, shape, or form. We were talking about that tonight,
right.
Critical thinking. But I think this format, we try to bring the most... In Miranda's words, the most compressed information we can.
Right.
And then you can follow this up if you would like. And sometimes, like Stigmata, we did a little mini episode after, then we found out there was more information. I have no qualms about if we find something or think something else needs to be addressed more thoroughly. We do a mini episode on the side and just, you know, do that.
No, absolutely. And I was kind of surprised that it only happened once, right?
Yeah.
Because we always, you know, I don't know.
It's like we always find out something later like to add to
right.
it. Yeah.
Or you're like listening to it and you're like, you know, we should have said X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I don't know. I really felt like the follow-up to that was like super justified and interesting. I don't know. Like, what are the odds that gets like you have a discovery.
I figured it in my own house. Right. I have it in my own house.
Yeah.
The answer to the big conundrum of the whole episode. There it is.
But I mean, I don't know. I thought it was great. I thought it was a nice follow-up, but it was like 5 minutes. I don't know.
So yeah, I think this and we'd love to hear from you all. I think this 20-25 minutes is fitting. Now, that's not to say in the future. So my next question to Shane, I think some of the reasons that the stories that we claimed we were going to, you know, go after in our trailer are much, much bigger stories that not only could not be covered in 20 minutes, but might take a 2 or 3-parter of a half hour apiece. They're big stories. So, all right. So let me ask you, Shane. Let me ask you now. I'm just going to ask you right now. What are you personally... Doesn't matter the size of the story.
Okay.
You know, what we would have to do, where we would have to go. What would you like? What is your favorite story that you would like to cover for the second season?
The story that, and I feel like you know this, that I keep coming back to and that I want to do, whether it's, you know, a Q Files thing or if it becomes its own unique beast, is just Stanley Meyer and the water car.
Yeah, we agree on that.
It's sitting here in our backyard. Like, literally, it is... like
17 miles away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Explain a little bit about that.
So, Stanley Meyer invented a car that ran on water. And he, you know, he was like a... was he a physicist or an engineer or something? Yeah. Has like some, I don't know, like appropriately unique backstory where maybe he's not as educated as he should be, but he's doing some things and he's tinkering in his garage. And he ends up developing... allegedly, this, you know, super efficient car. I can't think of the phrase. The
water car.
I mean, it's the water car, but like whatever they call that in physics. It's like zero friction or whatever.
Oh, car. Right.
So anyway, he or perpetual motion machine.
Perpetual motion.
That's what
machine.
It is.
That's right.
So he has this and he starts trying to like sell it or get it patented and stuff. And some of his stuff does get patented. And, you know, people have picked it apart in hindsight, but really like the I mean, I guess you can Google it, so I can just destroy the story by telling you the end.
It's okay, because getting to the end is fascinating.
I mean, it's like the reason I don't know if we can do it in like 3 30-minute episodes is because I feel like it's like a 10-parter.
Yeah,
like to do it in a good way.
Yeah.
Because all we have to do is go just down the road. And then to get to like even deeper into the story, we can just go to Kentucky, which is like 2 hours away.
Yeah.
Like we're not even, it's a day's job, you know? But anyway, so he's pitching his story to some investors, the Belgians, you know?
It's on the news. Like we have clips from local Columbus news showing him driving this water car. So it's not something completely underground. This is in the Columbus Dispatch. This is on WBNS TV.
Yeah. So I mean, it becomes a real thing. Like other people have seen the car, have seen it operate. You know, people are saying it works. They see him fill it with water and it runs. They don't see gasoline. They don't smell exhaust. So he's pitching it to these investors. Finally, after all of these years and all of these no's and the government interference or whatever, like typical conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah.
But he's in a...
It's too good. This is too good. You won't believe. This is just too good.
He's in the Cracker Barrel of in Grove City, Ohio. Sorry. It's not funny. A man died.
A Cracker Barrel in Grove City, Ohio.
Anyway, they're enjoying their meal as he like pitches them this. And then he like bolts up from the table. And he runs out to the parking lot with his brother. And he like collapses. And his last words in like hilariously dramatic fashion are, "They poisoned me."
Yeah.
And Stanley Meyer dies.
On the spot.
And
the
water
Grove
car.
In the Grove City Cracker Barrel parking lot. I mean, if Ohio isn't weird enough, the Stanley Meyer story alone.
I mean, it's just fantastic. But then it's not even just that. Like, so Stanley Meyer died and his patents like expire or whatever, and there's no one who believes him left. But someone does believe him. People have the car. The car exists. And part of the lore around the car is that it's buried. And it was like unburied and moved to Kentucky. And then it was mysteriously vanished. And now we think...
Sold to somebody.
But we think it's buried, like, in Ohio. Again.
So that's our real mission. Really. Our real mission is to find...
the water car.
The water car.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
I don't know it. If it's possible, but... I mean...
But you understand why we didn't quite fulfill our mission to... complete that story in the
first
season.
You can't figure out the water car in 2 weeks.
No, and I've reached out. I've gotten some leads and reached out to...
Yep.
I know people in Grove City who knew people whose parents actually invested in the water car.
Well, that's the other thing.
And they
just
mysteriously...
There's like a huge lawsuit over the car.
couldn't contact. I mean, we just run into a brick wall with people wanting to talk about this, which leads us to, you know, thoughts of no one will even talk to you about this. So then this is, what, 50 years now since then, the 70s?
No. This is like the 90s.
Is it 90? God, how I haven't even thought about the story in a while. Is it the 90s?
Yeah. Oh, it was like 1995, I think. I could be wrong. Don't quote me.
So 25 years.
Yeah.
And the story has just died. Nobody knows about it. And this is Shane and I's, you know, when we first thought of this series, we started talking about the water car. Yeah. And is it beyond normal? Yes. The car is beyond normal. Is the story beyond normal? Yes. Yes. And then the police investigation after is beyond normal. Everyone was...
Sorry, I stop rocking. Oh, because your cord is...
My cord is... I got you. everyone was recorded except the Belgians who were at dinner with him as far as investigation. The investigation is shoddy. I mean, frankly, I think this could just be a Netflix series.
It should be. I mean, if someone wants to just, like, steal the idea, I guess, do it because it's a fantastic story.
Oh, 17 miles away.
Yeah.
17 miles away. And one of the reasons I think we want to tell it, too, is because if we haven't, you know, gotten you to believe this so far, Ohio is the center of weird.
Absolutely.
It is the center of weird. And we celebrate that. We celebrate that. We do.
And it's so funny, like we've said that for ages, just based on like what we know and our experiences and our travels. But then like you see it pop up in just other little factions of the weird world where people are like, well, Ohio is pretty strange, or of course it happened in Ohio.
Yep.
And it's always, I don't know, whether it's a cryptid or it's a ghost story or it's some giant conspiracy theory, it's UFOs, it doesn't matter. It's here. It's happened here. Something has happened. It's always like that.
And we have the huge UFO, you know, history here because of Operation Blue Book at Wright-Patterson that's right down the street. I mean, we are the center of UFO lore.
Yeah.
We're right here and we have yet to do a big UFO story, which
we wanted to do some cryptid stuff and we wanted to do some UFO stuff because we can literally just go outside of Columbus and do it. And I mean, like Bigfoot, for example, the largest like Bigfoot conference is near Cincinnati. And you know, like why can't we just go? Obviously that changed in 2020.
Our and, Pawpaw Festival too. And not,
well, that's okay. Even like doing pawpaws, like we just can't do that now. Or we can't do it the way we wanted to. I don't remember what I was going to say.
Well, it's changed the whole angle that we do things because so much of this was field recordings and now we can't get to these places because they're not open.
Right. So, and I think that's how we envisioned, I mean, that's why we started with Hinsdale House because we had the recordings. And we wanted to do an investigation with the recordings. And we wanted to take people to places.
Yes, yes.
And
absolutely.
We have a few things left recorded where we went places. But what we don't have is the ability to keep doing that. And on top of that, we quickly discovered that field recordings plus editing plus our commentary requires like so many hours.
Well, for example, we're going on a ghost hunt this Saturday to the Stone Mansion in Indiana. In general, we will the recordings that we will do will be 6 to 7 hours worth of recording.
Right.
I'll probably be recording. Shane will be recording. Not only are we listening to that recording, but we're also go first to listen for EVPs. And I don't know if any of you have ever listened to 6 hours of tape to hear EVPs. It can be a rather tedious experience. So not only do we listen for EVPs, but then Shane takes this or I take it and write the script and do what should be cut. And then we decide that and then he has to cut it. I mean, you know, sort of random ghost hunting is a massive endeavor as far as producing a half hour episode. I mean, we're not a staff of, you know, 10. No,
it's just us.
So that's presented its own challenges with just kind of those recordings where you don't know what you're going to find.
Right. And I think even on top of that, like, you have, you know, 6-8 hours, whatever, of recording, but then maybe you went to the same room like 3 or 4 times. So you have all of this stuff that you might want to use, but maybe it's in different parts. So then you have to figure out how to connect those pieces,
yeah,
which are all like live and in the moment, but have them connected in a way that makes sense and doesn't sound weird or like you jumped in the conversation
or
somehow.
Disjointed. Yeah. It needs to flow. Yeah. It needs to flow.
And I think that's the hardest part when it can be like, all right, so minute 27 to minute 34 and then hour 15 to like whatever. And you're like, okay, well, those are totally different things.
And it's then
like,
if they're EVPs, you have to, you know, right. You know, enhance those so that people can hear on a podcast. Yeah, paranormal recording is not easy at all. It's just an enormous amount of editing.
Yeah.
So we do it when we can, when we think there is an interesting opportunity. Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, doing something like, we haven't done a ghost hunt since Brin Du, and it keeps us on our toes to do a ghost hunt. So that'll be exciting.
It will.
So I would love to, you know, hear, you know, from our listeners what they would like us to cover. Yeah. You know, especially if you have any little quirky story out there that might be local or anything. Again, you've seen the sort of subject matter that we do. Anything that is unusual, we would be happy to investigate and do an episode on. I think we'd love to hear from you all if you have your own unusual stories.
Your local haunting, your local cryptid, your local UFO story that just hasn't been told by 100 other people. Like, we want to dive down and find those unique untold stories.
Yes. Yeah. There, you said it. You just said it. Yes. Right. That's it. Those unique untold stories.
Yeah.
Because there's enough people out there telling the stories that have already been told. We want to tell the ones that no one's quite heard about before.
Yeah. And I mean, that is our goal. And I think we've tried to do that, and it's part of the problem of doing this in kind of like a ad hoc manner, really, where it's like, well, what is something that we think is interesting, but maybe not everyone has heard about?
Yeah. And actually, truthfully, most of the things we find interesting, most people haven't
That's true.
Heard about.
Truly. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
And, you know, we have yet to, I know it sounds, you know, cliched, but we have yet to go to, you know, Point Pleasant and visit the, at least pay homage to the Mothman statue. I mean, we're going to have to go there at some point.
Well, I mean, we would have been going there, I think, next month.
For the festival, yeah.
Or maybe September, but yeah. Yeah, that's probably, I mean, I know it's canceled now, but I think that's kind of like we waited to do things and to do them because we wanted to do it better.
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. That's
and
correct.
Even like the pawpaw, like we recorded at the pawpaw last year, but honestly, probably, I don't know, 90% of that isn't necessarily of anything.
Yeah, because, you know, again, that's another story we intended to do that we haven't done yet, is that, you know, there's quite a history of the pawpaw, and there's some unusual theories about the origins of the pawpaw and where they fit in religion and culture, and we know nobody's talked about this. So,
No,
and that involves Serpent's Mound in Ohio
and
Native American mounds and pawpaws. I mean, get that. That's going to be in the Garden of Eden.
It's a good one. It's crazy, and it's also crazy, like how we had a porch conversation about it, of like, hey, listen to what I read, blah, 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 blah. We should do this, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, weird messages came and, like, conversations happened where, like, we learned more secret information. And it was like,
yes.
I feel like I'm going to get murdered in my sleep. But, hey, maybe this is true. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask you what you asked me in a second. But, like, the reason the pawpaw never happened was because it became this little fun, quirky story of a thing that we're both, like, obsessed about, and turned into a, like, like, holy cow, someone could do a whole like season on this subject. And it's that true. Doesn't make any sense when you're talking about North America's largest fruit.
Yes. No kidding.
But when you go like a step further, you're like, that is strange. And there's so much history and so much weird history. And it just like explodes.
Yeah. Gets big. Story gets
kind
big.
Of like the flavor of the pawpaw.
It. And as a matter of fact, we're just about in pawpaw season. My parents, Shane and I, went and raided some pawpaw trees last year off my parents' house. Of course, they didn't grow. As they say, there is only one way to kill a pawpaw tree, and that is to try to transplant it. Well, we learned that for sure. But there's a pawpaw tree that goes over my parents' driveway, and I warned them this week, and I'm like, every day you check and tell us when the fruit is there. Because we love the pawpaw. If you don't know what that is, it is really a Ohio fruit, and it lasts like 3 days. And yeah. You can't really sell it commercially because it decomposes so quickly. If you want to get a pawpaw, you need to walk out in the woods and get and one and one. Eat it right there. And so we're going to go pawpaw hunting again this year. But there's usually a big pawpaw festival outside of Athens, and we went to that, and you get to meet the pawpaw experts themselves who are growing it and trying to cultivate it. And but yeah, we got interested. So typical of us, like Shane said. And then suddenly we learn all of this other history and what people have written about and thought about the pawpaw and its relationship to Native American cultures in Ohio. It goes very deep. And so...
I mean, it goes so deep that it's like Lewis and Clark. It's Thomas Jefferson. Like, there's pawpaw trees at Monticello.
Yeah.
Like, originals.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And Lewis and Clark actually claim it saved their lives.
Yeah.
When they found it. They didn't have any food.
Yeah.
So that's enough. So forgive us for not, you know, doing all these big stories, but they're coming. They're coming.
I mean, they have to come at some point because otherwise we're just going to be like, well, I guess we never did that. And it'll be like 10 years from now.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, what are you desperate to do?
What am I desperate to do? I'm with you on the water car. I'm with you on the water car, and I'm with you on the pawpaw. Like, truth of the matter is, the first six episodes could be the water car of the second season, and the second six could be the pawpaw. But the problem with both of those, not so much the pawpaw, because we could probably actually do the pawpaw right now. The problem with the water car is it is investigative journalism, truthfully.
Yeah, absolutely.
And us having the time, you know, working at other jobs, us having the time to be investigative journalists. But I would say both of those, since the beginning, we've talked about that. And I think, you know, that's on the horizon. We will tell those stories, and I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Yeah. So, and I think that's the thing. Like, we can tell you the story now, right? But to do it in the way that like does it justice isn't like you can Google it and find the information, but what you can't Google is go like solve the mystery.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's what I want to do. Like, I want to record us, I don't know,
right there when we solve the mystery.
Yeah. Like driving out to the middle of nowhere being like, we're gonna die and laughing
those
about
Belgians
it
are after and us now. Yeah.
And then just being like, holy fuck, that's the water car.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Like, could you imagine if we actually found it, like, located it, got to go see it? Because it exists. Like, we know it exists. It existed as of, what was it, 10 years ago?
Truthfully, this would be a national story if we located the freaking water car. Do you know what the water car would have done to this world's economy?
That's why they killed him.
That's why they killed him.
Sorry, I love talking about conspiracy theories, but I also just like love laughing about it. It's not funny. A man died.
Well, I'll just say one more thing. The parking lot of the Cracker Barrel in Grove City, Ohio. It's just, you don't make this stuff up.
No,
you can't.
You can't write that.
You can't. So, yeah, maybe we'll, instead of doing little one-offs, maybe we'll start to focus on a couple of these stories for the second season.
I mean, okay.
I don't know. Just like now, we'll be sitting here in 3 weeks going, what are we going to record this week?
I mean, so I think that's like the, like we want to get some good, fresh ideas. So yes. Again, like Lori said, like if anyone has anything, like get in touch, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email us, whatever. And we'll explore it and cover it. But also like there's just some really big, juicy stories that need to be told and deserve to be told really more than anything.
And I will say more than ever, I think the times demand this. I'm going to say it again. I think the cosmos has afforded us through this virus, through this upheaval, has afforded us a moment to slow down and yeah. think and go inwards and look to the sky, as we have said. This is a time where we should be considering the unusual, because everything around us is unusual now. Embrace the unusual. Be weird. Stay curious. When we say that, we mean it, because right now the cosmos is showing us things we've never seen before. And it's going to be more important than ever to keep your eyes out and to really pay attention to what the world is trying to tell us.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think, oh my gosh, what? So we had, like, the original thing was like, be weird, stay strange or something. And I don't remember, like, you brought up curious.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how we ended up settling on that exactly, or like why it got brought up, but it was better. Like yeah. it was just better. And so we did it, but like that is, I guess, like the gist of, like, the underlying current of everything is kind of like this idea of your authentic self, living that, being uniquely you, but also being curious and like to continue asking questions. And maybe that's yes. kind of what we did this season, and hopefully did it well.
Yeah. And you're right. Be weird, be your authentic self.
Yeah.
Don't be ashamed that you're interested in all of these yeah. strange, unusual things. Celebrate yourself because you are. And to use those interests as a gateway into understanding yes. more and empathizing with more and finding the world around you increasingly awesome.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
amazing and really magical.
Yeah. And I don't know, I guess I think at the end of the day, you know, we did all this, we put it all out there not knowing where it was going to land, and some things resonated more than others, but I hope at the end of the day people take away, like, it's okay to be curious yeah. and it's okay to be weird when you're curious.
It's more than okay to be weird.
Yeah.
Be proud of being weird.
Be a proud weirdo.
Be a proud weirdo. We are with you. We've been proud weirdos since we were born.
Yeah.
And hey, folks, thanks for listening and allowing us to have an absolutely amazing first season. If you have any weird, strange, or stories you're just curious about, let us know. You can send a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We'll be back in action before you know it. This show was created and produced by me, Shane McClelland, and Lori Gum. Until next time, friends.
Be weird. Stay curious. These are the Cue Files.
One more time. Ready?
Ready?
Be weird. Stay curious. These are the Cue Files. Is that it?
So we'll say, until season 2.